We've begun 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 14. Very, very important subject. Marriage, and specifically adultery. A very great sin, a damning sin, and yet a very common sin. And where do problems really start? You know, we talk about liberalism in government and corruption of society and the wicked law. Where does it really start? In the church. As soon as you get corruption in the church and false teaching in the church, and as goes the church, so goes the world. In other words, unfortunately, it's too often the other way around. The world likes, or the church likes to follow the world in its wrong ways and incorporate the world in its Christian worship and service. But so often, the beginning of liberalism and sin and corruption in society in general begins when the church goes down. They're no longer a lighthouse for the truth. They're no longer a stronghold and bastion against evil. When the sin comes into the church, then it goes from there out into the world and takes everything in. And so Peter says, false teachers have eyes full of adultery and that cannot cease from sin. Right, we've been looking at adultery itself. I want to look at how Peter tells us about the eyes of these false teachers, that not only they have eyes of adultery, but eyes that are full of adultery. Full. In other words, they're so dominated by this sin that it's always on their minds. And they're eaten up by this lust so that they cannot even contain their demeanor or their behavior. In other words, what happens is all their looks are wanton and wandering. They're on the look for opportunities to sin and to feed their base passion. Notice how sin is not just a small problem. It's not just isolated to certain places and somehow limited. The word full means it's complete. There's no room for anything else. Their eyes are full of adultery. And notice, man has been so affected by sin that it has corrupted our entire nature with all its faculties and powers. Our sin is not just something we have in one corner of our being, but it has permeated our entire being. Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Well, we already saw how Jesus said even the look on another person to lust after him is to commit adultery where? In the heart. And of course, the heart is the control center of our life. Out of the heart proceeds the issues of life. And God looks on the heart. And as is the heart, so is the person. And all that comes forth from that person. And so you go to Ecclesiastes chapter 9. What does the Bible say about man's heart as a sinner? It says, there is an evil among all things that are done under the sun, that there is one event unto all. All die. Why? Well, it's by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin. So death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. And what was the consequence of Adam's sin? Not only physical death and the eternal separation from God that follows physical death if a person dies in their sins, but there's also the issue of the corruption of sin. Man became depraved. His nature is fallen, and it's evil. It says, yea, also the heart of the sons of men is full of evil, and madness is in their heart. Sin is a form of spiritual insanity while they live, and after that they go to the dead. Live in defiance of God, in disobedience to God, live as if there were no God, breaking the laws of God, go out to stand before God and suffer the penalty of their sins, which is death. Eternal separation from God. That's madness. But their hearts are so full of evil that they live that way. And you know, the Bible has other places. Psalm chapter 10. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Well, what comes out of our mouths? Psalm 10, verse 7. This is talking about the unregenerate, an unsaved, unbelieving person. Verse 7. His mouth is full of cursing and deceit and fraud. Under his tongue is mischief and vanity. Not some, not once in a while, not a little, full. His heart is full of evil. His mouth is full of cursing. What about his actions? You know, we're talking about how do you stop violence, you know, pass gun laws or whatever. No. You better get to the heart, not to the instrument. In Isaiah chapter 1, God is talking to religious people who are observing his ordinances. They're attending upon his worship. What's he tell them? Well, they had not hearts right with God. He says in verse 15, when you spread forth your hands, which is an attitude of prayer, I will hide mine eyes from you. God won't even look on them when they pray. Why? God is of pure eyes and to behold evil, and he cannot look on iniquity. His eyes are upon the righteous. His ears are open to their prayer, but his face is against them that do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. So what does he say? Yea, when you make many prayers, I will not hear. Why not? Your hands are full of blood. Full of blood. Or you are doing all kinds of hurtful, malicious, and deadly things toward others. So I won't hear your prayers. Now look with me at Romans 1. What happens when men turn away from God? This is really why we're having violence. Our nation has turned away from God, and what results from that? What happens when men turn their backs on God and go away from him in sin? God says, all right, I'm going to take my hand off of you. I'm going to withdraw myself from you. I'm going to remove myself from the picture and turn you over to the worst possible thing you will ever experience. What's that? Your own heart. I'm going to let your heart have a free rein and express the sin that they are full of, and then let's see what your life will be like. That's the worst judgment of all. You read Romans 1, and it says how they didn't glorify God and weren't thankful, so God gave them up to uncleanness. You know, they changed the truth of God into a lie, and so God gave them up to vile affections. And verse 28, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge. And when you come right down to it, that's why they say you can't talk about God in the public square, you can't bring God into school, you can't bring God into your government affairs, you got to keep God out of these things. Why? Because it's a political issue? Not at all. They have hearts that hate God and want nothing to do with God. They want to keep God out of the picture. And what happens? They did not like to retain God in their knowledge, so God gave them over. That's the worst thing that can happen. God to give you up, turn you over, and say, go your own way. Have what you want. Do your own thing. Live as if I'm not there, and I'll let you. And you're going to eat the fruit of your doings, and it's bitter fruit. Notice that God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. Now he blinds their mind so they can't even know what's right. And then he allows them to follow their own thoughts and imaginations to do the things that are totally wrong and destructive. And they do them with great gusto and relish. They give themselves over to those things completely. And it says, being filled, they're filled with blessing, with God's presence and favor and fellowship, you know, with the good things that God gives. No, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful. That's what their life is full of. That's a life without God, and a life given over to the lusts of our flesh. What a terrible life. And it ends in death. Knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things, they know that they deserve to die. That they commit such things are worthy of death. They not only do the same, they go out and do it anyway. And God won't judge me. I'll get away with it. Nothing will happen. And then they also encourage each other in misbehavior. And they have pleasure in them that do that. Or if you go along with their sin, you're their buddy. They like you. You say something about it, you don't like it, you tell them what they're doing is wrong, they're going to have to answer for it. You're their worst enemy, and they want nothing to do with you. They hate you for it. But they know. They're not getting away with anything. Their own conscience tells them. They just push past it and go on. Their eyes are full of adultery. Why? All sin is insatiable. In other words, you can't say I'll only sin so much or so far and then I'll stop and then I'll go back. No, sin takes a hold and it gets power and it goes further and it gets worse and it's a downward spiral that you cannot escape. Their cravings for immorality are never satisfied. So they're always looking for more partners to commit lewd acts with. Now, it's never enough. That person never satisfies. I'm only going to do so much sin and then quit there. No, their sin won't allow them to stop. Pushes them on and on. Notice Ecclesiastes again. Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Verse 8, all things are full of labor. Now, why is everybody so active all the time? Always trying to accomplish all these things. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with hearing or seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. Now, if our eyes are led by our sin, we're never going to be satisfied. Of course, seeing is not enough. They want to commit the act of adultery, but committing the act will never make them happy either. And so they go on and on, trying to get more, and yet getting no closer to getting what they're trying to gain. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, so he had said, what's the good of riches except to behold them with your eyes? You know, a lot of people like to go into their safes and count their money. Wow, I got this much money. I got this much money. Oh, right. And they love to see that. What's it do for them? They just see it. It doesn't do anything for them. And he brings out here in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 8, it says, there is one alone and there is not a second. He's describing a vanity here. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother, yet is there no end of all his labor. Always scraping, working for more. Neither is his eye satisfied with riches. Neither saith he, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? Why am I doing all this? Why am I spending all this time and effort, all this frustration and vexation to gain what? What's it doing for me? Nothing. And I'm losing out on true good things in the process. Peace, contentment, happiness. This is also vanity, yea, it is a sore travail. They love to look on their riches, but it doesn't satisfy them. And these false teachers, their eyes are full of adultery, but that does not ever make them happy or satisfying. And here's what they think. If these are married men, which they probably are, if they're committing adultery, why aren't they satisfied with their own spouse? Well, because sin is always looking for forbidden treasure. If this is a lawful pleasure and allowed to me by God, that's not good enough. That's not what I want. I need variety in life. I need more than one. Even though God says one, I need more than one. And so they think, yeah, I have my wife or my husband, but stolen waters are sweet, Proverbs chapter 9. See, that's the deceitfulness of our lust, and that's the reasoning of our sin. It's better to have someone else than the one we have already. I always tell people, the best person you have is your own husband or wife. And you cannot find someone better than that. It'll only be worse. Verse 17. Stolen waters are sweet. You know, there's the adventure of it, the thrill of the hunt. I'm getting away with something. Or however they think. The stolen waters are sweet. And this is in direct reference to adultery. So it's talking about the strange woman telling the adulterer that he should oblige her and fall prey to her wiles. And bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Right? If we're doing something wrong and we hide it and we get away with it, oh, that's, isn't that exciting? Of course, you can't hide it from God and you never get away with it. He always sees it and he will punish it. But they convince themselves otherwise. If no human eye sees them and they can carry on an affair, then they think, this is very pleasant, very enjoyable. This is good. That's what they tell themselves. But what's the truth? Well, in the end, it will be bitterness. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 18 says, but he knoweth not that the dead are there, and that her guests are in the depths of hell. This is the path to death and damnation. Nothing sweet or pleasant in that. You know, but they won't consider their latter end. They're so consumed with lust and so captured by their sin, and they're so taken up with the pleasures of sin for a season that they don't think about after that is the judgment. Look at Proverbs chapter 5, verse 3 and 4. Golden waters are sweet, but what's it going to lead to? You know, a momentary trice can lead to a lifetime of great grief and heartbreak. Verse 3, for the lips of a strange woman drop as a honeycomb. Oh, we love honey, that's so sweet. One of our favorite things. And her mouth is smoother than oil. Oh, you know, oil is another very delightful commodity. So she talks and she allures, seduces, and then you fall for her wiles, but her end, what is the end of that? Her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, her steps take hold on hell. That's a terrible end, but that's the end of adultery, as we saw last time. It's a sin that excludes from heaven. And so their eyes are full of this adultery. They're the windows of the soul, and their soul is so corrupt that you look in their eyes and the evil just comes out from their eyes. Their very countenance expresses the filthiness of their hearts, and their eyes are set on sin, so they cannot even control their gaze. And I see you people, you're watching, you can see they're looking at women and sizing them up and doing all kinds of things in their heads. It just comes right out. And that's how these false teachers are. Look at Isaiah chapter 3, verse 9. You know, what's in us can be seen. Those around us will witness our hearts by even our glances. How we direct our eyes. In verse 9 of Isaiah 3, it says, "The show of their countenance," in other words, the look of their face, "doth witness against them." Well, what does it say about them? "And they declare their sin is Sodom, they hide it not." In other words, they're shameless. They don't even try to disguise their adulterous attitude. And so it says, "Woe unto their soul, for they have rewarded evil unto themselves." And isn't it amazing how we convince ourselves, if I can only have this, I'll be so happy, this will be so good, this will meet my need, I'll be better for it. And we're rewarding evil to ourselves while we convince ourselves that we're doing ourselves good. Now this phrase, "their eyes are full of evil," it can also be translated, "their eyes are full of an adulteress." In other words, that's what they're looking for. It's easy to find. Turn the TV on, go to the movies, look at the magazines. They're all right there. If these were virtuous women, they would not put themselves out like this and expose themselves to public view for what? What does that do for them or anyone else? All it does is stir up people's lust, their purient interest, their lewdness. That's all it's meant to titillate or to draw out of people. This is why we have to be so careful. They're always on the look for immoral and immodest women that will be willing to commit this sin with them. Now look at Jeremiah chapter 5. Jeremiah lived in a day like ours, a day of rampant immorality and lust, where all the moral bounds God has set were being broken on every hand. Verse 8. Probably 7 and 8. "How shall I pardon for this? Thy children have forsaken me and sworn by them that are no gods. When I fed them to the full," as you gave them an abundance of material things, much like our country, "when I fed them to the full, then they," what did they do with it? Use it to the glory of God? No. "Then they commit adultery and assemble themselves by troops in the harlot's houses." Or they were going to the houses of prostitution in great numbers. And they were as fed horses in the morning. Or they lowered themselves to the level of beasts. You know, beasts have their hormones that direct and control their lives. You know, they go about their activities, including reproductive activities, based on instinct that God has put in them. And then they become like animals. They lose the use of their reason. They no longer pay any attention to the warnings of their conscience. They only follow out their fleshly passions and desires. And it says they were as fed horses in the morning, everyone neighed after his neighbor's wife. We know how horses can be very fleshly. They're described that way, and very lustful. And he's saying people are acting that way in Jeremiah's day. Now here's the amazing thing about this. Remember who we're talking about here. We're not talking about atheists. We're not talking about pagans, you know, heathens. We're not talking about people that have no relationship to God and the church at all. We're talking here about church members. They're in the church having communion and eating at the feasts of the church. They're even leaders and teachers in the church. They're false teachers. That's who Peter's talking about. How can they be like this? That's where it begins. Jeremiah chapter 7. Now, one of the worst diseases is the disease of the head. And they say a fish, when the head rots, the rest of the fish corrupts with it. Well, when you have the head of people, especially in the religious world, becoming corrupt, how soon others follow. But Jeremiah 7, verse 8, he sends Jeremiah to the gate of God's house, the temple, to speak to the people going in there. What's he going to tell him? Good going. You know, I'm glad you're worshiping the Lord. You're a holy people. No. Verse 8, behold, you trust in lying words that cannot profit. Will you steal, murder, and commit adultery, and swear falsely, and burn incense unto Baal, and walk after other gods whom you know not, and come and stand before me in this house, which is called by my name, and say we are delivered to do all these abominations? Can you imagine that? They go to the temple, and what do they say? We're saved to sin. We don't have to worry about going to hell. We're forgiven. We can sin now without any fear or any consequences. And one of those is adultery. Is this house, which is called by my name, become a den of robbers in your eyes? Behold, even I have seen it, saith the Lord. I see it. Imagine how brazen that is to go out and do your dirty living, come to the house of God, stand there and claim to be God's people and being blessed as you worship Him. So they were using the cover of religion in order as an opportunity to prey on women. Is that unusual? It's in the news all the time. So, pedophiles and the fornicators and the adulterers that are religious people, you know, priests and ministers and whatnot, it's in the news all the time. And it's something that happened in the Bible too. 1 Samuel 2, you remember the sons of Eli. Verse 22, it says, now Eli was very old and heard all that his sons did unto all Israel, and how they lay with the women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. He said unto them, why do you such things? For I hear of your evil dealings by all these people. Nay, my sons, it is no good report that I hear. Ye make the Lord's people to transgress. You're leading them in their sins. Again, Jeremiah's day. There were many false prophets in his day, as Peter said earlier in the chapter, even as there are false teachers in our day. What were the characteristics of these false prophets? Jeremiah chapter 23 and verse 9. My heart within me is broken because of the prophets. All my bones shake. I am like a drunken man and like a man whom wine hath overcome because of the Lord and because of the words of his holiness. But Jeremiah, what's upsetting you so much? For the land is full of adulterers. But because of swearing, the land mourneth. The pleasant places of the wilderness are dried up, and their course is evil, and their course is not right. For both prophet and priest are profane. Notice who's he talking about. Who's adulterer? Prophet and priest. Yea, in my house have I found their wickedness, saith the Lord, right under the roof of the temple. Verse 14. I have seen also in the prophets of Jerusalem a horrible thing. They commit adultery and they walk in lies. They strengthen also the hands of evildoers, that none doth return from his wickedness. Notice that. They're sinning. They're encouraging other people to sin. They are all of them unto me as Sodom, and the inhabitants thereof as Gomorrah. Now, chapter 29, 22 and 23. And of them shall be taken up a curse by all the captivity of Judah. He's talking here of false prophets who prophesy a lie to the people in God's name. Those in Babylon say, the Lord make thee like Zedekiah and like Ahab, whom the king of Babylon roasted in the fire. They were burnt to death for their crimes. What did they do? Because they have committed villainy in Israel and have committed adultery with their neighbors' wives and have spoken lying words in my name, which I have not commanded them. Even I know and am a witness, saith the Lord. They're villains, even among the very people of God. What did they do? Commit adultery and then lie in the name of the Lord. Just like the people up here is talking about. So their eyes are full of an adultery. You know what they don't understand? True beauty is not outward beauty. You know, outward beauty is very shallow and short-lived, and it can be nothing more than a snare. True beauty is spiritual. True beauty is the holiness of heart and life. Psalm 29, verse 4 and 5, it says, the voice of the Lord, no, I'm sorry, I want 1 and 2. Give unto the Lord, O ye mighty, give unto the Lord the glory and strength. Give unto the Lord the glory due unto his name. Worship the Lord, how? In the beauty of holiness. Don't come into his house committing sins and then covering it up with your religious profession. Worship him in true beauty, the beauty of holiness. True beauty is the beauty of the character. It's inward beauty. Psalm 45. Psalm 45, verse 11. So shall the king greatly desire thy beauty. It's talking about the church here. Jesus will greatly desire thy beauty, for he is thy Lord, and worship thou him. What beauty is he looking for? Verse 13. The king's daughter is all glorious within. The beauty of grace. The beauty of the heart. Her clothing is of wrought gold. That's true beauty. Peter says it in 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 3. Verse 2. He's telling the wives to be in subjection to their husbands. So if your husband doesn't believe, you can win him by your life. While they behold, what does the husband need to see in his wife? While they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear, outward and inward holiness. Who's adorning? All right, what adorning should a husband see in his wife? Well, let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair and of wearing of gold or putting on of apparel. No, it's not fashion and beauty. But let it be the hidden man of the heart, and that which is not corruptible. Now, our beauty fades and decays, not the heart. What beauty is that? Even the ornament, here's true beauty, the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. That's what God looks for, and that's what we should look for. But these false teachers are corrupt. They have no holiness themselves, and so they have no interest in the true spiritual beauty. They cannot in any way identify with it. All they look for is an adulteress, not a godly Christian woman. Now I tell young men, if they're not married, you know what you need to do? You need to pray, God, give me a godly Christian woman, one who loves you with all her heart and is devoted to you and lives her life for you alone. That's what I need for a wife. That's true beauty. We'll close with Proverbs chapter 31 and verse 30. Proverbs 31 and verse 30. Here we have a virtuous woman described, and it says, favor is deceitful, and beauty is what? Vain. Empty. That's talking about outward physical beauty. But a woman that fears the Lord, she shall be praised. False teachers can't identify with that. They have no part of that. They don't look for that. But if you're a Christian, that's what you see and you appreciate and that you prefer. And that's what God likes, and we should have the same attitude as God. Let's close in prayer.